I'm Lina Khumudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at a vaccine against breast cancer that is showing some positive results. But first, World Immunization Week and Africa Vaccination Week are held the last week of April each year to raise awareness and promote vaccination against vaccine-preventable diseases. This year's theme, the Big Catch-Up, aims to reach kids who missed vaccinations and strengthen routine immunization programs. A new report released by UNICEF reveals that 67 million children across the world missed out on either some or all routine vaccinations between 2019 and 2021. Countries in Africa and South Asia have the highest number of under-vaccinated kids and those with zero doses. The total in West and Central Africa comes to 6.8 million children. Service disruption due to COVID-19, conflict, and vaccine hesitancy are partly to blame, according to experts. The World Health Organization have rolled out what's called the Big Catch-Up to vaccinate millions of children who were not immunized during the pandemic. Efrem Tekle-Lemango, Global Director of Immunization for UNICEF, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the endeavor to vaccinate children in conflict zones like Sudan, northern Nigeria, and Chad is difficult, but not impossible.
With this Big Catch-Up campaign, we are targeting 20 large and high-burden countries who have significant number of zero-dose children. And we understand that 40% of zero-dose children or children that remain missed are in conflict-affected zones or countries who are facing some form of fragility. And the countries that you have mentioned are only few of those countries facing such fragility. What we do along with partners, the Gavi Alliance, World Health Organization, and development partners, is we try to support these countries to be able to roll out these vaccines. Number one is through supply of vaccines to these areas, especially after negotiating humanitarian corridor to be able to avail vaccines and to be able to also work with civil society organizations who are based on ground, who have a structure on ground, by providing them the required technical assistance for them to be able to deliver these vaccines.
In Sudan, you don't have a humanitarian corridor, do you?
In Sudan, we have a regular basis where we have been delivering services working with the government. And that is currently being used to deliver vaccines in those facilities that are functional. And, you know, this conflict is evolving, so it could be quite volatile, and we need to adjust our approaches to be able to deliver services. But in urban areas where facilities are still functional, services will be able to be delivered using government systems, but UNICEF will be able to chip in areas where there is significant disruption to services through availing vaccination campaign sites, outreach services, and also engaging with civil society organizations that have the capacity to do so. We do this, we have done this in the past in northern Nigeria, in conflict-affected settings in northern Ethiopia, and some political countries which are facing fragility.
How important is it for these children to at least get that first dose? What happens if they don't?
Well, this is a very critical thing because we have 67 million children who have not completed their vaccinations, or out of these, 48 million of them never even had any vaccine. So if we remain without reaching these children, it means that these children will be vulnerable for vaccine-preventable diseases. This is the likes of measles, diphtheria, which used to be, and polio, which used to be history. And these are diseases that are close to elimination and eradication. If we don't do our job right, it means it's the coming back of these diseases that we will not be in a position to be able to respond to, depending on the size and number of these outbreaks. We have seen over the last 2 years period increasing number of measles outbreaks. In 2021, we had 22 countries reporting measles outbreaks. In 2022, we had 33 countries reporting measles outbreaks. And this is increasing number of countries that are facing large and disruptive outbreaks, which means suffering and sickness for children and causes more significant mortality.
That's Efrem Tekle-Lemango, Global Director of Immunization for UNICEF. He was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from UNICEF headquarters in New York. UNICEF warns intense fighting in Sudan is taking a devastating toll on children and putting millions of lives at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Even before hostilities between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces erupted less than a week ago, Sudanese children were among the most disadvantaged in the world. UNICEF reports Sudan already has one of the highest rates of malnutrition among children globally, with more than 3 million acutely malnourished. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says the escalation in violence has raised the risks for Sudan's children.
And we've now got a situation where critical life-saving support for around 50,000 children is at risk. These children are in hospitals because they have the most severe cases. And when the bombing begins or the shelling begins outside a hospital and when medical staff need to flee, then what?
The World Health Organization reports more than 400 people have been killed and over 3,500 injured. UNICEF notes at least 9 children are among the dead and more than 50 wounded. Elder says children will continue to pay the highest price for a war not of their making. WHO has verified that 11 hospitals in Sudan have come under attack. According to Sudan's Ministry of Health, 20 hospitals in the capital Khartoum and across the country have been forced to shut down due to attacks and lack of medical supplies and staff. And it adds another 12 health facilities are at risk of closing. Elder says many of these hospitals and health centers and other critical infrastructure have been damaged or destroyed. He says UNICEF has reports of children sheltering in schools and care centers and of children's hospitals forced to evacuate as shelling moves closer.
These children in hospital, the severe acute malnourished children, and of course any child in ICU is the gravest concern, both because medical staff do also need to find safety when they're under attack. So then you've got potentially children with life-threatening conditions being left alone.
UNICEF reports many families are trapped in their homes with little or no access to electricity, at risk of running out of food, water, and medicine. It joins with other UN and international agencies in calling for an immediate cessation of hostilities so it can quickly and safely reach children in need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we'll have a look at what observers say is a promising vaccine against breast cancer. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play a message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to breast cancer. Preliminary data for a potential vaccine against breast cancer developed by Cleveland Clinic looks promising. Researchers say the results from the ongoing phase 1A of the vaccine to prevent triple negative breast cancer have shown an immune response among all the women who participated in the small clinical trial. According to the American Cancer Society, triple negative breast cancer is usually more aggressive, harder to treat, and more likely to come back than other breast cancer. For more insight, I spoke with Amit Kumar, the chairman and CEO of Anixa Bioscience, a California-based company that is licensed to create the vaccine, and Jennifer Davis, a mother in Ohio and the first woman in the U.S. to get the vaccine during the clinical trial.
Dr. Amit Kumar and Jennifer Davis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Let me start with you, Dr. Kumar. You are the CEO of Anixa Bioscience. The company is developing a vaccine for breast cancer, something very unusual. Tell us more about the vaccine. What is the technology behind it? And is it for prevention, treatment? What is it exactly?
The vaccine was developed at the Cleveland Clinic over the last two decades. And we partnered with the Cleveland Clinic to help bring this vaccine to clinical trials and then eventually commercialization. The vaccine is designed at the current time to be a preventative, a prophylactic vaccine. So one of our goals is to be able to show that this vaccine will prevent triple negative breast cancer, which is the most lethal type of breast cancer, in women who are triple negative breast cancer survivors, like Jennifer, who are worried about their cancer coming back, recurrence of the cancer, as well as to be able to prevent the primary cancer, meaning prevent triple negative breast cancer in women who have never had cancer before. So we're in the middle of the phase one early stage clinical trials. We've presented data at the American Association of Cancer Research. And so far, the results are looking very, very promising.
One question that a lot of people have is, why is it that cancer has been around for so long, but there is no prevention tool such as a vaccine? And now here you come up with this vaccine, and it's for specifically for triple negative. Now, let me come to you, Jennifer. When did you find out that you had breast cancer, specifically triple negative, and what initial treatment steps have you gone through?
I was diagnosed in September of 2018 with triple negative. I was diagnosed by a local facility and then decided to go to Cleveland Clinic for my treatment. Had an amazing team there. I had chemotherapy, followed by double mastectomy, followed by radiation. It was a long process, and so then just had follow-up appointments after that. But with triple negative, you know, there is nothing. Once treatment is over, there's nothing that I take. You know, you can't take tamoxifen or any other medication to kind of give you that peace of mind that there's not going to be a recurrence. So when the vaccine became available, I was very, you know, excited and wanted to participate in the trial.
So Dr. Kumar, why specifically triple negative breast cancer? Is it because it's the most common or the most aggressive, or is it a vaccine that could be eventually used for other types of breast cancer?
We believe that the vaccine will eventually can be used to prevent other types of breast cancer. However, triple negative is the most lethal form. It's the type of breast cancer that is responsible for the most deaths and the highest rate of recurrence for people who are survivors. And so we focused on that for that reason, as well as the fact that the target protein, which the vaccine targets, is seen very frequently on triple negative breast cancer cells. So while the clinical trials we're engaged in right now is focused on triple negative breast cancer patients, and that type of cancer, we do believe that this vaccine will have an effect on other types of cancers as well, eventually, as we expand the clinical trials.
So you said right now the clinical trial is at phase one?
Yes, that's correct. Clinical trials are typically done in three phases. Phase one is the earliest phase, focused on initially safety as well as some indicators of efficacy.
Jennifer, what prompted you to engage in this trial? And did you have any concerns at all about side effects or effectiveness?
I was not concerned, really. The amount of worry that I had that it was going to come back far outweighed any concern that I had going into it. You know, I was able to complete all the pre-testing, and I was lucky enough that I qualified for it, and I didn't hesitate to get it.
Dr. Kumar, why was Jennifer a good candidate for the trial?
At this stage, we are enrolling women who have had triple negative breast cancer and have gone through standard of care, which, as Jennifer indicated to you, was initially chemotherapy, surgery, post-surgical recovery, and then additional therapy, either radiation or additional chemotherapy. And that whole process is pretty brutal. Luckily for Jennifer and the other women in the trial, they were able to curatively be treated, meaning there's no evidence of the cancer using standard diagnostic techniques now. Now, these women are all potential candidates for recurrence of the cancer. These women wake up every morning, and if there's a headache or a pain in their belly, the first thing they worry about is, has my cancer come back? And so we wanted to see this vaccine could potentially eliminate the possibility of recurrence in these patients. Now, the trial is designed to evaluate the efficacy through biomarkers at the current time. But we're hoping Jennifer and all of the other participants in the trial will never have a recurrence of their cancer.
How long is the immunity anticipated to last? And will there be a need for a booster?
That's a very good question. And we don't know the answer to that. We can speculate a little bit. One of the reasons that you often need boosters for example, the COVID vaccine and the flu is the fact that the target protein the immune system is trained to attack is a protein that often mutates. So it changes. Protein that is not mutating and it exists in the body already. And so we're hoping that we don't need booster shots. Ideally, the immune system, as we know, has memory. It remembers. Hopefully, after initial vaccination, we won't need to boost the patient. But we'll not know the true and the final answer to that for some time.
So the preliminary report says that the results are remarkable. Jennifer, how do you feel after taking the vaccine?
I feel wonderful. I feel even better after getting the results this week. It gives you a peace of mind, and I want to be an advocate for it. I want this, you know, on the grander scale. Of course, I'm happy that it's worked for myself, but this could potentially wipe out triple negative breast cancer, you know, in years to come if it works the way that everyone hopes that it will. And if that happens, you know, to eliminate, you know, 12 to 15% of the most lethal kind of breast cancer is just, it's remarkable. And I'm very excited for those results and, you know, for this to keep moving forward.
Dr. Kumar, you heard what Jennifer said. Projected number is 1 in 4 in the future. What is it about breast cancer that we still don't know? I mean, for someone like you who has been working on this vaccine for so many years, what have you learned along the way that the average woman needs to know?
Well, Lenore, we've made a tremendous amount of progress in breast cancer. We have screening techniques such as mammography, MRI, and so forth. And we've also educated a lot of women to do self-exams. So luckily, we're able to often catch breast cancer early. Even the most lethal form, like triple negative breast cancer, like in Jennifer's case, she noticed a lump in her breast and she immediately went and had it checked. But the process of treating that cancer is very brutal. It's not very much fun, as Jennifer will tell you. What we would like to do is to be able to just give women a shot or a series of shots and eliminate the potential onset of breast cancer. Now, what we've done so far in our study, and it's a small number of women because it's early stage, but we've demonstrated that the vaccine can create an immune response in these women, meaning that we've trained the immune system to make certain types of cells, like T cells, which is a type of cell that targets the cancer cells, and that's those are the results that we showed earlier this week at the scientific conference. that in all of these women, we were getting some level of immune response. Now, some women had a relatively strong immune response, and some women had a relatively modest immune response. What we don't know today is how strong an immune response is necessary to prevent cancer. We'll learn about those, answer that question and others as we go forward with additional clinical studies.
One of the things that it's often talked about is the access to clinical studies for some communities in terms of the research, in terms of how the technology can be adapted to a particular group. When it comes to triple negative breast cancer, it's been known that Black women, as I mentioned earlier, are very much at risk of developing a more aggressive form of cancer, which is triple negative, and die from it. I was wondering in your clinical trial, how much of that population is also involved?
That's a really, really good point, Lenore. You're absolutely right. Certain genetic profiles of women have a higher rate of triple negative breast cancer. And African American women are certainly in that category. Now, in our clinical trial, we're in the phase one clinical trial, we are not going to be recruiting a large number of patients. We're going to be doing anywhere from 18 to 24, maybe a few more than that. And we've had some women of minority background in the trial, but we would like many, many more. And in fact, I would like to tell women who are interested to keep track of how the progress is going. My company's stock symbol is ANIX. You can look it up and watch our press releases. And if you are able to or interested, we would like you to call us to see if you can participate in either this trial at the phase one stage or as we expand to additional trial sites in phase two. At the current time, all of the patients have to be at the Cleveland Clinic. But as we go forward, we'll be expanding sites across the country and perhaps even internationally. So people should, if they're interested, keep track. If they're so inclined, we would welcome everyone calling us to. They would be interested in participating in the trials.
What do you anticipate in terms of timeline with phase two, phase three?
This is not a vaccine that's going to be developed and available overnight. It takes time. Studies have to be done properly. We anticipate that the first version would be utilized for patients like Jennifer, who are triple negative breast cancer survivors, to try and prevent recurrence of that breast cancer. And then eventually for primary prevention, preventing breast cancer in women who have never had breast cancer. To your point earlier, some men as well. We're thinking a few years, maybe 5 years, plus or minus, for the first target of patient population that are worried about recurrence, and then maybe a few years later for primary prevention.
Before we wrap, Jennifer, what have you learned through this journey with breast cancer that you would like a woman to know?
I think that there's a couple things. Going through this is, you know, very, very difficult, but it is important to find some positivity, to remain positive, to look for things that, you know, bring you joy. And that's just like personally. As far as like clinically and going through the process, I think it's very important to find a good team that you trust. And if you need a second opinion, you know, absolutely get a second opinion. And, you know, that is your right, you know, to find a medical team that you know is going to take care of you. And it was so important for me. And the Cleveland Clinic did that for me. My team there, like I said, was just amazing. And, you know, I credit them for saving my life. So it's very important. Second opinions. And then, you know, like Dr. Kumar had said, you know, early detection, you know, get your mammogram, do self-exams, follow through with those types of things. I have spoken to a lot of women that say, oh, I don't get mammograms because I'm scared, which, you know, it is scary. It is scary, but the alternative is worse.
And Dr. Kumar, before we wrap, this vaccine gives hope. What is the next frontier for someone like you who is a scientist and works in this field?
Well, if this vaccine demonstrates that it can prevent triple negative breast cancer in high risk women, for example, then the process, the mechanism that is being utilized for this vaccine could be utilized for many other types of cancer. And it'll change the way that we evaluate how to prevent cancer. So it's a very exciting clinical trial. As I stated earlier, we're at the early stages, but so far everything looks very promising. And as we test this vaccine on larger numbers of women, including more women of color, then we will be able to make some conclusions. And I think potentially it could change the way cancer research is done in the future.
Dr. Amit Kumar and Jennifer Davis, thank you so much. We appreciate your time and we wish you all the best with this vaccine against breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer precisely.
Thank you, Nular.
Thank you.
Amit Kumar is chairman and CEO of Anixa Biosciences, and Jennifer Davis is a clinical trial patient. As the world marks World Malaria Day, Tuesday, April 25th, it is estimated that at least one child dies of the disease every 2 minutes globally. According to the World Health Organization, 95% of the deaths occur in Africa, where the disease is endemic. The world is grappling to contain the new malaria vector, Anopheles stephensi, that is described as dangerous and can breed in areas that were not prone to malaria, including urban areas. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The theme of the World Malaria Day this year is Time to Deliver Zero Malaria, Invest, Innovate and Implement. According to the WHO's latest World Malaria Report, there were 247 million cases of the disease in 2021 compared to 247 million cases in 2020. The estimated number of malaria deaths stood at 619,000 in 2021 compared to 625,000 in 2020. Africa continues to be the most affected with 95% of malaria cases and 96% deaths. Dorothy Fosa Achu is the team lead tropical and vector-borne disease at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. She says the new malaria strain caused by vector called Anopheles stephensi is dangerous and drug-resistant. She says that the vector thrives in many areas, including those that are not malaria endemic. On the other hand, the director of the WHO Organization's Department of Immunizations, Vaccines and Biologicals, Kate O'Brien, says the WHO is facing vaccine resistance. She encourages countries with a high malaria burden to accelerate vaccine uptake.
We have a malaria vaccine. It's the RTSS vaccine. It's been introduced. It's completed its clinical trials. It's been authorized for use from a regulatory perspective, and it's in rollout. So very exciting program of rollout. The difficulty with the RTSS vaccine is that it's in quite constrained supply. And so we're really looking for enhancing that supply, which is an ongoing effort to develop a supplier that can produce the vaccine in much greater quantities.
Africa continues to bear the burden of the impact of malaria on child and pregnant women. The WHO report indicates that four African countries, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Niger, accounted for over half of malaria deaths worldwide. WHO representative to Kenya, Diallo Abdulrahman, says in Africa, out of 40 million pregnancies, 13.3 million are exposed to the disease during pregnancy, which increases the risk of low birth weights.
The target is to reach over 134,093 children annually in 8 counties around Lake Victoria in Nyanza and Western Kenya, where malaria is endemic. At the beginning of March 2023, we distributed the vaccine to another 25 sub-counties in addition to the initial 26, reaching at least 133,185 more children.
The WHO says political commitment, sustainable funding, community engagement, and inclusive health systems are needed for Africa to achieve malaria-free future. With the current interventions, the global anti-malaria community has averted 2 billion malaria cases and 11.7 million deaths between the year 2000 and 2021. 82% of those cases and 95% of deaths were averted in Africa. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voanews.com and voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenor Moudou, in Washington with producer Mukbili Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to...